in Oakland, California this morning, pilot Linda Finch takes off on an adventure that actually started 60 years ago. On this day in 1937, Amelia Earhart began her attempt to become the first person to fly around the world at the equator. She failed. Her plane disappeared over the Pacific Ocean. But in that, she achieved a measure of immortality. On the latest National Geographic radio expedition, NPR's Alex Chadwick reports Linda Finch hopes to finish what Amelia Earhart began.
The door to the hangar is bigger than any big theater movie screen, and it's opening slowly and improbably, folding outward on a horizontal midline and upward from the bottom. And there is Linda Finch's amazing airplane. 1930s aerodynamics, like an artifact from an old movie, or a dream.
The aircraft is very rare. There were only 15 manufactured initially in the 20s and 30s, and there are only two left in the world.
Ms. Finch is pretty rare herself, a 46-year-old grandmother who owns several nursing homes in Texas, and a pilot who restores and flies vintage fighters. Even so, replicating Amelia Earhart's flight is difficult. And though she doesn't like to say so, a little risky.
We'll be flying in an aircraft that is the exact same model Amelia flew, and we'll be following the same route that she flew around the world.
Well, I'm sure some people hearing about this flight would say, what is the point in setting off in an aircraft that's already failed in this once? I mean, it's dangerous, maybe recklessly dangerous.
Well, I have a lot of advantages that Amelia didn't have. We will have modern navigation, communication, and flight instruments that she just didn't have available at the time. The flight, I believe, needs to be done in the right airplane, to be historically correct, to generate the excitement in order to communicate our message. I started learning about Amelia and really feel like I came to know her. And although I think that flying was definitely a part of her being, that she really flew to get the recognition to convince people that they could do what they wanted, especially women in the 1930s, that people were not limited to small lives, that they could have their dreams.
Amelia Earhart was an aviation pioneer, daring and determined, the second flyer after Lindbergh to solo across the Atlantic. 14 others had died trying to repeat his flight, and Amelia nearly did when a crucial instrument failed in bad weather. Here's that earlier flyer after her Atlantic flight, when President Hoover presented her with a gold medal from the National Geographic Society.
I came down until I could see the white caps breaking in the darkness. If it had been a smooth sea, I might have come too far. Whether I was 50 feet off the water or 150, I do not know, without my altimeter. I was too close, however.
The plane that Amelia used on her round-the-world attempt, a Lockheed Electra 10E, is 38 and a half feet long, with a 55-foot wingspan. The tail angles back on a small, solid rubber rear wheel. The nose tilts upward toward the sky. She glows like a polished aluminum athlete, broad-shouldered, beautiful as a swan dive. She carries two 9-cylinder radial Pratt & Whitney Wasp engines. These are the first air-cooled engines developed. At 650 pounds, they produced more than 400 horsepower when they were introduced in 1926, and that was an extraordinary weight-power ratio for the time. Linda Finch's plane has later, more powerful versions of that engine, as did Amelia Earhart's. Except for new navigation and communication gear, their planes are identical.
The aircraft was in boxes and pieces and parts, and one of the things that I discovered is that prior to World War II, there were no parts manuals. You get just a big box of pieces, and it's like a jigsaw puzzle. You have to figure out how to put it together.
She describes the Electra as graceful and slow in flight, almost peaceful. Amelia did all her flying, but carried a navigator co-pilot, and so will Linda. The cockpit is a narrow, confined space, barely enough room for twin controls, and the enormous, banquet-sized steering wheels.
What do these wheels feel like? They look like they came out of 1940s British sports cars or something.
Exactly, and the wood is so worn. We actually had some new ones we could have put in, but I like these because they're worn and they've been in the airplane, obviously, since it was new.
So this is all human-powered controls for turning things and making the airplane fly.
Absolutely.
people are very surprised that there's just a thin cable and actually you move the cable. Everyone always says, does it have hydraulic controls? But absolutely not.
These things here, these switches and hand controls, those are original on the plane. This is what Amelia Earhart flew.
Exactly. There are many things. The controls, the throttle and the propeller and mixture controls, the fuel selector gauges, the magneto switches, the gear indicator. But all of the things that have to do with the airplane mechanically are, in fact, the same as Amelia.
The plane was at the airport in Memphis, en route for tests elsewhere. Linda and navigator Bob Fudge had refilled the main battery the evening before, and something had gone wrong. Overnight, it leaked acid, eating away at a small panel of the undercarriage. They had to remove it. The technology is 60 and 70 years old. Linda Finch knows how it works, why it's reliable. But she is attempting to fly around the world in an airplane where the rivets all show, and the cockpit windows slide open, and little accidents cause the flawless aluminum skin to weaken and decay. The navigation electronics are as good as you can get. She has an onboard satellite link to the internet. Schools can check her progress hourly. But the actual airplane is decades older than Linda Finch herself. And on many portions of this flight, she's going to have to overload that plane with fuel in order to cross open water.
What does your daughter think of this? What does your family think when you are setting off to recreate a flight that Amelia Earhart did not survive?
Well, my daughter is very supportive and excited and pleased and is real involved in the project. On the other hand, she's a worrier, so she always worries. And she's most happy that we'll actually be sending the airplane position back on the internet every hour, so I think she'll be watching that quite closely to see where we are.
Oakland, across the country to Miami, then San Juan, Puerto Rico, Cumana, Venezuela, Paramaribo, Suriname, down to Natal in Brazil and across to Africa, Dakar, N'Djamena, Khartoum. It'll be hot over the desert. Karachi, Calcutta, Rangoon. In a couple of months, she'll get to Lae, New Guinea, the last place Amelia Earhart was ever seen. Here's Amelia, after flying the Atlantic.
I hope that the flight has meant something to women in aviation. If it has, I should feel it justified. But I can't claim anything else.
And here is Linda Finch. In a tan wool gabardine flight suit, strain showing in her face a little from the work and the stress, but mostly looking eager to go finish that great adventure.
Well, I don't know what happened to Amelia Earhart, and neither does anyone else, certainly. When I'm reading a book about Amelia and I get to the last communications that they heard from her, that's really where I stop reading, because I just think it doesn't matter. What does matter is what Amelia did with her life, and that's really the focus of our project.
Pilot Linda Finch, who sets out today to fly around the world in a Lockheed Electra 10E, the plane Amelia Earhart flew. For Radio Expeditions, this is Alex Chadwick reporting.